Chapter 155. Never offended you, or did you wrong, but on whom you vented the malice and hatred you have conceived for your nephew, and whom you have made an instrument for wreaking your bad passions upon him. What if we tell you that, sinking under your persecution, sir, and the misery and ill usage of a life short in years, but long in suffering, this poor creature has gone to tell his sad tale where, for your part in it, you must surely answer. Apostrophe, apostrophe, if you tell me, apostrophe, said Ralph, if you tell me that he is dead, I forgive you all else. If you tell me that he is dead, I am in your debt and bound to you for life. He is. I see it in your faces. Who triumphs now? Is this your dreadful news? This your terrible intelligence? You see how it moves me. You did well to send. I would have traveled 100 miles afoot, through mud, mire, and darkness, to hear this news just at this time. Apostrophe, even then, moved as he was by this savage joy, Ralph could see in the faces of the two brothers, mingling with their look of disgust and horror, something of that indefinable compassion for himself which he had noticed before. And he brought you the intelligence, did he? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Ralph, pointing with his finger towards the recess already mentioned, and sat there, no doubt, to see me prostrated and overwhelmed by it. Ha, ha, ha. But I tell him that I'll be a sharp thorn in his side for many a long day to come, and I tell you too, again, that you don't know him yet, and that you'll rue the day you took compassion on the vagabond. Apostrophe, you take me for your nephew, apostrophe, said a hollow voice. It would be better for you, and for me too, if I were he indeed. Apostrophe, the figure that he had seen so dimly, rose, and came slowly down. He started back, for he found that he confronted not Nicholas, as he had supposed, but Brooker. Ralph had no reason, that he knew, to fear this man. He had never feared him before. But the pallor which had been observed in his face, when he issued forth that night, came upon him again. He was seen to tremble, and his voice changed as he said, keeping his eyes upon him, what does this fellow here? Do you know he is a convict, a felon, a common thief? Apostrophe, apostrophe, hear what he has to tell you. Oh, Mr. Nickleby, hear what he has to tell you, be he what he may. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the brothers, with such emphatic earnestness, that Ralph turned to them in wonder. They pointed to Brooker. Ralph again gazed at him, as it seemed mechanically. That boy, apostrophe, said the man, that these gentlemen have been talking of, apostrophe, that boy, apostrophe, repeated Ralph, looking vacantly at him. Whom I saw, stretched dead and cold upon his bed, and who is now in his grave, apostrophe, who is now in his grave, apostrophe, echoed Ralph, like one who talks in his sleep. The man raised his eyes, and clasped his hands solemnly together. Apostrophe, was your only son, so help me God in heaven. Apostrophe, apostrophe, in the midst of a dead silence, Ralph sat down, pressing his two hands upon his temples. He removed them, after a minute, and never was there seen, part of a living man undisfigured by any wound, such a ghastly face as he then disclosed. He looked at Brooker, who was by this time standing at a short distance from him, but did not say one word, or make the slightest sound or gesture. Gentlemen, apostrophe, said the man, I offer no excuses for myself. I am long past that. If, in telling you how this has happened, I tell you that I was harshly used, and perhaps driven out of my real nature, I do it only as a necessary part of my story, and not to shield myself. I am a guilty man. Apostrophe, he stopped, as if to recollect, and looking away from Ralph, and addressing himself to the brothers, proceeded in a subdued and humble tone. Among those who once had dealings with this man, gentlemen, that's from 20 to 25 years ago, there was one. A rough fox-hunting, hard-drinking gentleman, who had run through his own fortune, and wanted to squander away that of his sister. They were both orphans, and she lived with him, and managed his house. I don't know whether it was, originally, to back his influence and try to over-persuade the young woman or not, but he, apostrophe pointing, to Ralph, used to go down to the house in Leicestershire pretty often, and stop there many days at a time. They had had a great many dealings together, and he may have gone on some of those, or to patch up his client's affairs, which were in a ruinous state. Of course he went for profit. The gentlewoman was not a girl, but she was, I have heard say, handsome, and entitled to a pretty large property. In course of time, he married her. The same love of gain which led him to contract this marriage, led to its being kept strictly private. For a clause in her father's will declared that, if she married without her brother's consent, the property, in which she had only some life interest while she remained single, should pass away altogether to another branch of the family. The brother would give no consent, that the sister didn't buy, and pay for handsomely. Mr. Nickleby would consent to no such sacrifice. And so they went on, keeping their marriage secret, and waiting for him to break his neck, or die of a fever. He did neither, and meanwhile the result of this private marriage was a son. The child was put out to nurse, a long way off. His mother never saw him, but once or twice, and then by stealth. And his father so eagerly did he thirst after the money which seemed to come almost within his grasp now, for his brother-in-law was very ill, and breaking more and more every day never went near him, to avoid raising any suspicion. The brother lingered on. Mr. Nickleby's wife constantly urged him to avow their marriage. He peremptorily refused. She remained alone in a dull country house, seeing little or no company but riotous, drunken sportsmen. He lived in London and clung to his business. Angry quarrels and recriminations took place, and when they had been married nearly 7 years, and were within a few weeks of the time when the brother's death would have adjusted all, she eloped with a younger man, and left him. Apostrophe, here he paused, but Ralph did not stir, and the brother signed to him to proceed. It was then that I became acquainted with these circumstances from his own lips. They were no secrets then, for the brother, and others, knew them, but they were communicated to me, not on this account, but because I was wanted. He followed the fugitives. Some said to make money of his wife's shame, but, I believe, to take some violent revenge, for that was as much his character as the other, perhaps more. He didn't find them, and she died not long after. I don't know whether he began to think he might like the child, or whether he wished to make sure that it should never fall into its mother's hands. But, before he went, he entrusted me with the charge of bringing it home. And I did so. Apostrophe, he went on, from this point, in a still more humble tone, and spoke in a very low voice, pointing to Ralph as he resumed. He had used me ill cruelly, I reminded him in what, not long ago when I met him in the street and I hated him. I brought the child home to his own house, and lodged him in the front garret. Neglect had made him very sickly, and I was obliged to call in a doctor, who said he must be removed for change of air, or he would die. I think that first put it in my head. I did it then. He was gone 6 weeks, and when he came back, I told him with every circumstance well planned and proved. Nobody could have suspected me that the child was dead and buried. He might have been disappointed in some intention he had formed, or he might have had some natural affection, but he was grieved at that, and I was confirmed in my design of opening up the secret one day, and making it a means of getting money from him. I had heard, like most other men, of Yorkshire schools. I took the child to one kept by a man named Squeers, and left it there. I gave him the name of Smike. Year by year, I paid £20 a year for him for 6 years, never breathing the secret all the time, for I had left his father's service after more hard usage, and quarreled with him again. I was sent away from this country. I have been away nearly 8 years. Directly I came home again, I travelled down into Yorkshire, and, Skulking in the village of an evening time, made inquiries about the boys at the school, and found that this one, whom I had placed there, had run away with a young man bearing the name of his own father. I sought his father out in London, and hinting at what I could tell him, tried for a little money to support life, but he repulsed me with threats. I then found out his clerk, and, going on from little to little, and showing him that there were good reasons for communicating with me, learned what was going on, and it was I who told him that the boy was no son of the man who claimed to be his father. All this time I had never seen the boy. At length, I heard from this same source that he was very ill, and where he was. I traveled down there, that I might recall myself, if possible, to his recollection, and confirm my story. I came upon him unexpectedly, but before I could speak he knew me. He had good cause to remember me, poor lad, and I would have sworn to him if I had met him in the Indies. I knew the piteous face I had seen in the little child. After a few days' indecision, I applied to the young gentleman in whose care he was, and I found that he was dead. He knows how quickly he recognized me again, how often he had described me, and my leaving him at the school, and how he told him of a garret he recollected, which is the one I have spoken of, and in his father's house to this day. This is my story. I demand to be brought face to face with the schoolmaster, and put to any possible proof of any part of it, and I will show that it's too true, and that I have this guilt upon my soul. Apostrophe, unhappy man. Apostrophe, apostrophe, said the brothers. What reparation can you make for this? Apostrophe, apostrophe, none, gentlemen, none. I have none to make, and nothing to hope now. I am old in years, and older still in misery and care. This confession can bring nothing upon me, but new suffering and punishment. But I make it, and will abide by it whatever comes. I have been made the instrument of working out this dreadful retribution upon the head of a man who, in the hot pursuit of his bad ends, has persecuted and hunted down his own child to death. It must descend upon me too. I know it must fall. My reparation comes too late, and, neither in this world nor in the next, can I have hope again. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he had hardly spoken, when the lamp, which stood upon the table close to where Ralph was seated, and which was the only one in the room, was thrown to the ground, and left them in darkness. There was some trifling confusion in obtaining another light. The interval was a mere nothing, but when the light appeared, Ralph Nickleby was gone. The good brothers and Tim Linkinwater occupied some time in discussing the probability of his return, and, when it became apparent that he would not come back, they hesitated whether or no to send after him. At length, remembering how strangely and silently he had sat in one immovable position during the interview, and thinking he might possibly be ill, they determined, although it was now very late, to send to his house on some pretense. Finding an excuse in the presence of Brooker, whom they knew not how to dispose of without consulting his wishes, they concluded to act upon this resolution before going to bed. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.